Good morning. It's Sunday, June 29th, 2014. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Karnatz. Ahead, the Cajun Zydeco Bug Band will play this afternoon at the Fayetteville Public Library. Be warned, they might also give dance lessons. We hear a song and short conversation with them in the second half of Ozarks at Large.
And it's sort of like soccer, but it's on horseback. Polo in Bentonville. And we celebrate the horse in our Sunday morning montage.
But first, when it comes to education, Common Core state standards and universal pre-kindergarten seem to be in the forefront. Early childhood education begins even earlier than pre-K, as young as 6 weeks of age. As more and more mothers return to the workforce shortly after giving birth, and those children's grandparents remain in the workforce until an older age, more and more infants, toddlers, and preschoolers are spending their days in a child care facility. The Division of Child Care and Early Childhood Education at the Arkansas Department of Human Services regulates these facilities. According to that organization, regulations for facilities are reviewed as the state legislature passes laws that would affect them, such as no smoking in or around certain buildings or the emergency preparedness law. The last time a change in requirements like this was required was in 2011. The rules, however, have not received an unsolicited overhaul in 45 years, until now. David Griffin is the Associate Director of Licensing.
Those have not changed. There have been no major revisions since the law passed in 1969, that's 45 years ago. We have kept pace in Arkansas with basic health and safety standards, and we rank well nationally because of the health and safety issues. But when you look at programming, appropriate curriculum, qualification and training for staff and directors, staff child ratio, those core licensing issues have been unchanged since 1969.
Griffin says the comparison nationally is not a numbers game, but it is reflective of where Arkansas stands with states with similar economic standing. As the state is lagging, the department has proposed various changes to the child care and early childhood education requirements. It is a lengthy process that has been going on for a few months, and one that will end when they take the proposed changes before the Arkansas Early Childhood Commission next month. The commission, comprised of a variety of representatives of stakeholders from around the state, has oversight on all rules and regulations. The proposed requirements have been taken out for several public hearings and remain open for comment through June 30th. Griffin says he and others are still in the process of going through all of this information to look at where changes need to be made, as they do want to be sensitive to the needs and wants of child care providers throughout this process. When and if the commission grants approval, they will go back through the legislative subcommittees, such as the Joint Committee on Children and Youth and the Rules and Regs Committee, before final promulgation. Pending final approval, new regulation booklets will be printed and sent to all child care providers in the state, after which they will be given 60 days before beginning enforcement activity. One of the proposed requirements that is being revisited per public comment regards facility directors, and that they will all have to have a college degree either in childhood education or a degree in anything and experience in childhood education.
We have had some concerns from across the state that having a degree requirement and locking it into that may be difficult for small programs in rural areas. So one of the things we're doing right now is we're revisiting that particular proposal and looking at if there might be a third option that would combine some formalized training with maybe either an AA degree or some other type of certification in lieu of a degree.
Currently, within this proposed requirement, anyone who has previously qualified or has been employed as a director, either currently or in the past, will maintain their qualifications, thus softening the impact by grandfathering them in. Across the state, there are a variety of types of child care facilities, from the federally funded, the mom and pop, corporate run, to the stay-at-home mom keeping her own children, plus a few extra. Griffin says the requirements for each are the same, but they are trying to build in some flexibility to help the smaller facilities or those in rural areas. Another requirement that could potentially hurt smaller operations is a reduction in the teacher-to-child ratio. For the youngest ones, it would move from one teacher for six kids to one to five. As with much of their research, Griffin says they looked to similar states.
We invariably found out that the way that they did that, the way that they kind of softened the blow to move forward in that area, is to grandfather in, for a limited period of time, existing providers. And we have built that in on that one. At this point, the grandfather clause is stated as existing providers would not have to meet the new ratios for a period of about 2 years past the implementation date, whatever that ends up being.
He did say that Arkansas is one of only 5 states in the nation that still has a 1-to-6 ratio. Every other state, other than the other 4, is doing much better. Positive and frequent interaction between teachers and infants and toddlers is very critical and can shape the rest of a child's life and education. It is difficult to meet these interaction requirements because teachers could spend so much time meeting the basic needs, like changing diapers, putting the babies down for naps, or feeding, which doesn't leave a lot of time for intellectual stimulation, unless those ratios are lowered. Federal-funded early childhood program Head Start's performance standards are within the National Head Start Act of 1981. Embedded in that is that all facilities must also follow state licensing requirements. Brenda Zedlitz is the Director of Children's Services for the Economic Opportunity Agency of Washington County, which operates 8 Head Start locations in the county. She says that the program has high standards and is already exceeding the proposed requirements.
For early Head Start, there's the requirement that your ratio is 4 infants, toddlers to 1 teacher caregiver. And our classrooms, we can have up to 18 per teacher, but we like to cap that off at 15 just for quality of services. And it depends on your ages of your children. If you've got 18 4-year-olds almost turning 5, that's a lot different than 18 3-year-olds who've just come out of the early Head Start classroom. So we have a lot of latitude in our ratio and how we are able to manage our classroom size for quality.
As many who work in education do, Zedlitz has a passion for her job and concurs that brain development is crucial at this early age and thrives on relationships and attachments with adults.
I mean, we're real big on making sure that classroom interactions between the child and the staff are quality and they have the time to actually interact. And it's not just a babysitting daycare services, but there's quality interactions going on because that's how the brain develops.
Corinne McDowell, school director of privately owned for-profit Cedar Crest Academy in Fayetteville, also does her best to keep the number of children to teachers as low as possible. But with teachers and assistants calling in sick or going on vacation, it can be difficult. But Cedar Crest's preference is to remain below the state standard. McDowell says the proposed changes could still put a burden on Cedar Crest financially.
Because we can have the ratio for one child, but the classroom licensing only allows us to have twice the ratio. So if we have six to one ratio, we can only have 12 kids in the room, even if it's big enough for 15. The 1-to-5 ratio is going to bring us down. Instead of being able to have 12 kids in the room, we'll only be able to have 10. And so financially, in this hallway alone, we're going to lose 8 kids. And so that's roughly about $5,800 a month in tuition that we'll be losing because of the new ratios. And you know, we'll adapt and we'll make it work, but it's gonna be a challenge.
2 degreed teachers are in the infant and toddler hallway, serving as leads and mentors to all 4 classrooms. The preschool hallway houses a degreed teacher in each classroom, upholding the curriculum of the national owner, Phoenix Children's Academy. Cedar Crest is just 2 years old, the newness perhaps putting them at an advantage to some providers. The building was designed with the National Infant Toddler Environmental Rating Scale and Early Childhood Environmental Rating Scale in mind. The building has a very rustic and cabin-like look and is complete with 36 cameras throughout. The security is not a requirement, but it is becoming the norm among newer facilities. Of the proposed requirements, one does look directly to the building and the facilities. It's in regards to playground safety, and it will affect Cedar Crest's current equipment on their 4 playgrounds. They have 1 for each age group.
Currently, the regulations require that any equipment that where the children can stand that's 2 feet up off the ground has to have the use areas, they call them use zones, the wood chip areas. But now it's going to be any stationary equipment where they're above ground level, period, at all, even if it's just a couple of inches. So that might affect, you know, a couple of our pieces.
McDowell has a degree in education and has been working in early childhood since 1990, herself serving as a licensing specialist for the state, going into facilities just like this one, making sure they're following the rules. DHS works on a trimester system, visiting every 3 months. Zedlitz at Head Start has been in the field since 2002 and has also served as a licensing specialist. She says the public awareness of the importance of the early years on critical childhood development in just the 12 years since she came into the area has really grown, but that there's also more of a demand for childcare as women have more of a place in the workforce, saying childcare isn't just a place for the kids to go while parents are at work. Quality matters, and help for the smaller providers is necessary.
I feel for the business owners who are having to make these adjustments. Again, I think there needs to be some sort of system of subsidizing child care. Every child care needs to be quality. Every child needs that quality experience. Parents have to work. Parents have to make a living to provide for their children, and we need a way to make sure those children are receiving what they need while those parents are being responsible parents to provide for their families.
Tanya Williams, director of the Division of Child Care and Early Childhood Education at Arkansas DHS, says programs with high quality standards make a difference and set examples for the rest of the state, and that's what they're trying to build.
These are minimum licensing standards. They're not equal or equitable to Arkansas Better Chance or Head Start, but it's the beginning foundation of helping the field to understand what you're doing in your program and what you're doing in those classrooms matter. You know, let's set the stage for a good one. And so, you know, there's a lot of evidence in all of that, and we have really good information now that in settings where people are not using high standards, the children are not performing as well as they go into public education, and that's sort of unconscionable.
A public comment period for the proposed requirements is open through June 30th. Information is available at arkansas.gov/childcare. For information on the child care and education programs at Cedar Crest Academy, cedarcrestnwa.com. And for more information on Head Start programs, eoaheadstart.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
The intense fervor over the World Cup has spilled into northwest Arkansas and the Arkansas River Valley. Just check out some of the bars and restaurants around here during the U.S. matches. And though football still reigns supreme for sheer number of fans in this area, the sports menu continues to diversify.
Now for Northwest Arkansas Polo Club. Let's hear it for our home team. In our first position, we've got Manuel Gomez.
Sunday, the home fans were out on a manicured field along Price Coffee Road near downtown Bentonville for the opening moments of the home season for the Northwest Arkansas Polo Team. John Wilson, the president of the Polo Club, sums up the sport for the uninitiated in a concise way.
You're on a horse that's moving about 40 miles an hour while the ball is moving and it's bouncing in the grass and it's going all these different directions. It would be like having, like you standing in the back of a pickup while someone throws a baseball at you while you're driving past and trying to hit it.
The 7-minute periods of play are called chuckers, and there are 7-minute intervals between each chucker. Points are registered when the team sends the ball through a designated goal at either end of the field. A few days before the crowds and teams arrived for the Sunday match, John Wilson sat at the empty field on the tailgate of a truck, and he explained that though polo is rather new to this region, it's easy for spectators to pick up the basics.
It's like watching a hockey game on horseback. It's very high speed. When the ball goes through the goal, it's a point. And it's not much more than that.
There are 4 players on the field at a time, plus 2 umpires on horseback, and they follow the ball over a large field, 300 yards long, 160 yards wide. If there is any drawback to polo as a possible spectator sport, it is the other side of the field can seem a long way away. But the game has almost everything else Americans seem to want in their sports: speed, teamwork, and scoring.
It also has physical contact. Part of polo as opposed to horse racing is you're bumping and checking and while you're running up and down the field. And it's very high action. It's very, very much a spectator sport. In addition, you know, the spectators come out, and it has a lot of that Kentucky Derby kind of thing to it, too, where the men get to wear bow ties, the women wear the big hats, and at halftime, after the second chucker, everybody goes out and they stomp divots.
On Sunday, the crowd began arriving by 11 in the morning and setting up tents to be close to the action. Dana Donaldson was among the first to arrive Sunday, and he had a field-side seat. Dana has been around horses since he was a child, and he coached the Oklahoma State University polo team for 14 years. He's also played the game all over the world, Argentina, Australia, Dominican Republic, and New Zealand.
Oh, it's an adrenaline rush. You get going full bore, and it's there's nothing feels quite as good as getting a good long shot, you know, against a good team.
He says those long shots are satisfying for both players and fans, but the more you know about the game, the more you watch, the more you can also appreciate the subtle defense. There are maneuvers like bumping or hooking a defender can use to impede access to the ball, but a defender has to be thinking ahead all of the time.
You want to be on what's he called his offside. The offside is his right hand. The near side is his left hand. The player has to carry his mallet in the right hand, as of about 1964 in the United States. So his strongest shots are on his right hand side or the offside.
Does that put left-handed people at a disadvantage?
Yes, it does. But I know quite a few left-handed players who you don't cut them any slack, I promise you that.
There are institutional rules for safety about mallet use and when and where a player can engage in the action. An invisible line follows the ball and its trajectory down the field, allowing the players who hit the ball to have a sort of right-of-way access to eliminate potentially dangerous situations. The ball can become airborne, but it weighs just 4 ounces. And not to lessen the abilities of the humans involved, but the majestic athletes are really the horses. Kevin Gardner, a member of the Northwest Arkansas team, says his horse Rocky is his partner.
He's been playing polo longer than I have, which is great. He helps me a lot. And
seriously, he helps you?
Yes, yes. He's been playing so long that when he sees the ball go by, he'll go after it. and he's very calm and reliable, and he's a great animal.
John Wilson, the president of the Northwest Arkansas Polo Club and a player on the team, agrees that without a relationship between animal and player, there's no success.
You have to be able to communicate well with your horse. Your horse has to be understand what it is that you're trying to do. And the horse is the real athlete in the match. They're the ones that are doing all the running, and they are very, very highly trained. They're very highly conditioned and very highly bred. As a player, I'm on the horse trying to communicate where we need to be in order to pick up the play as it comes along. But you'll see, by and large, the horse is the actual athlete.
The Northwest Arkansas Polo Club wants this sport to increase here in popularity for both spectators and possible players. The matches are presented without pretense, and Susan Kohler is an expert at play-by-play, letting novices in the crowd understand exactly what they're seeing take place. Polo is also an equal opportunity sport. Sunday, men and women, and in the juniors' exhibition, boys and girls, play at the same time. There are players taller or lighter than others, and, at least here, experienced players are assisting newcomers. Lorena Gomez says she brought her tent and picnic food to the event Sunday so she could watch a new player, her husband, Manuel.
My husband is playing polo. He is from Mexico, and we just got here, and so now he's into polo.
John Wilson says there are more players in Arkansas than you might expect, and the local club is developing younger players as well. Before Sunday's feature match, the juniors exhibition included several teenagers, including Robson McCartney.
It's kind of intimidating, and especially because you have to take the horse's safety into everything you do on the horse, and you really just, you know, you have this fear of failure, so you just have to go out on a limb and take the swing.
It should be noted that Robert did just fine Sunday, including scoring a goal. The Polo Club hopes to have at least one feature match on the home field in Bentonville each month through early fall. You can learn more about how to get to the field, the schedule of events, and how the game is played at nwapolo.com. And Kevin Gardner says the club has made one more very visible effort to make Northwest Arkansas feel comfortable getting to know polo. The local team's colors are a familiar red and white.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think we tip our hat to the red and white colors of team sports here in Northwest Arkansas. So I think there was little choice but to pay homage to our Razorbacks.
This is Ozarks at Large.
You got 30 seconds left. Bobby making a big breakaway down to that west goal, trying to see if he can capitalize on this. Everybody's after him.
This we like the party. Is one of the most sampled songs of all time. So what's really original?
I think you'd be really hard-pressed to listen to something today and not be able to at least find four bars of it that's completely derivative of something else.
I'm Guy Raz. Music, inventions, philosophy, art, everything is a remix. Next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Listen today at noon to 91.3 FM.
Summer. Warmer, longer days, floating on Arkansas's lakes and rivers, lounging by the pool, biking and hiking our area's trails, and hopefully no visits to the emergency room. Summer does come with some increased risks. Swimming accidents, boating accidents, and sunburn are a few of the more obvious hazards. Ozarks at Large's Sara Birmingham paid a visit to Bella Vista's Mercy Clinic and asked Dr. Scott Estes about how to keep you and your family members out of the ER this summer. Dr. Estes says the number one danger is something we get plenty of in summer here in Northwest Arkansas, heat.
Prepare, hydrate, don't get yourself out in a situation where you can't get out of the heat. Be respectful of the heat.
According to the Arkansas Department of Health, between January 1, 2008 and December 31, 2013, more than 300 people were taken to a hospital because of heat-related illness in our state. Dr. Scott Estes at Mercy Clinic in Bella Vista says high temperatures are made more dangerous by high humidity, preventing sweat from evaporating fast enough to allow your body to cool naturally.
People just don't hydrate enough. They probably don't prepare ahead of time when they're going to be out in the really hot and humid weather, because you really have to anticipate that and start hydrating really well before you go out. And so if someone goes out, say, just to do what they think is going to be light yard work, and it's one of our really, really hot summer days, and it's very humid, and they get busy, it can really get away from them before they realize it. And they may start trying to catch up by getting some fluids, but sometimes, especially in the elderly or people who have other chronic medical conditions, they never will catch up. So they will find themselves, you know, maybe feeling lightheaded, may have a little bit of shortness of breath. If they stop sweating, that's really a bad sign. That's a sign that you're really significantly dehydrated. And mental status changes is the big thing. A person can actually suffer pretty significant brain damage as a result of heat-related illness.
So you've hydrated. You've prepared for the heat. You're headed out and about in this beautiful corner of the natural state. But there's danger in the bushes. We're talking ticks.
The big things to be concerned about with tick bites, really three illnesses for the most part, and that would be Rocky Mountain spotted fever, Lyme disease, and another condition called borreliosis. There is a good rule of thumb about a tick bite, and that is that it really takes about 24 hours from the time that a tick attaches before it can actually burrow into the skin deep enough to actually transmit any disease. So if you find a tick and you know that it's been there less than 24 hours, then you probably don't have anything to worry about. If you can't tell how long it's been on, or if you know it's been attached for more than 24 hours, then you do have to be concerned about the possibility of transmission of disease. And usually I just recommend people call their doctor about that. Most of the times, just to be safe, the doctor will prescribe the antibiotic that would treat those things. If you haven't had medical attention and you remember that you had a tick bite and then you start having some symptoms suggestive of disease, then that's where it gets a little bit more tricky. But the main things there are fever, joint pain, and then there are certain rashes that are associated with these different vectors that, a physician would need to look at.
And as for getting rid of ticks, here's Dr. Estes' rundown on removing your unwelcome guest.
Take a fine point tweezer, get down very close to the skin where you can get the head of the tick, and just extract it. Really shouldn't try to jerk it out quickly, just slowly extract it. And then you can look at the area with a magnifying glass, see if you see any signs of debris still in the bite site. And if there is, it'll usually actually come out on its own, or you can just take the end of a sterilized needle and just lightly scrape it out. The main key is don't just grab it by the body and pull it out. You need to get a pair of tweezers and get down at the head of the tick and extract it that way.
And here's another summer safety concern, snake bites.
The main concerns in this part of the country are probably copperheads. I think we see more bites of that from that snake than anything else that are serious. You know, rattlers and water moccasins or cottonmouths are present too. Contrary to what you see in the movies like in True Grit, where you have to get somebody to the hospital at a certain time before they die, people typically don't develop systemic reactions and have the threat of death associated with a snake bite. It can occur. What it actually causes is some problems with the blood's clotting mechanism, and it can produce some serious systemic effects rarely. But usually what you get is just a very localized severe inflammation that causes a lot of painful swelling where the bite occurred. We've all seen the cutting the wound open and sucking the venom out, or using suction cups and doing things like that. And I remember when I was a Boy Scout, they used to have the kits for us to do that. But the best bet really is just get to medical care as quick as you can.
Summer also comes with a whole lot of self-inflicted injuries. Dr. Estes has some pretty basic advice to avoid the ER with those.
There's a saying that says, you can't beat stupid. So people who do foolish things are going to have foolish outcomes. You don't need to be jumping off of cliffs on the Buffalo River headfirst into the river. That's a good way to have a very, very bad outcome. You shouldn't be climbing in areas where you can fall off and seriously injure yourself. You shouldn't be running the lawnmower by the window where you can put a rock through the window. There's not anything magical about that. I think it's just people need to be ever vigilant and use common sense. But we certainly do see all manner of accidents that will occur just from people being out and being more active.
Another medical complaint that rises with the temperatures is food poisoning.
People are eating outside more. They're relying on other types of refrigeration other than their nice in-home refrigerator. Maybe they're carrying things to the lake, or they're carrying things out somewhere and just have it on ice. And there are certain foods that are just not going to stay very fresh that way very well, and you do certainly have the possibility of getting a foodborne infection. So you just need to be very, very cautious about making sure that those foods stay cold. It would be things like anything that is milk-based, or potato salad and things of that sort. Need to make sure that they stay very, very cold, and don't let them ever reach room temperature, or certainly not outside temperature.
Remember to keep that instant read meat thermometer handy if you're grilling, just to make sure your choice cuts have reached the FDA recommended minimum internal temperatures. Finally, Dr. Estes says that you want to avoid the emergency room even if you do get bit, hit, hot, or sick this summertime.
Our emergency rooms are pretty well flooded, and so if you're relying on the emergency room to provide, the bulk of your medical care, you're going to be frustrated. You're going to be aggravated at the time it takes. Plus, it's just not the best utilization of resources. So I would certainly encourage everyone to have a primary care physician that can take care of the bulk of their medical needs. And all of the things that we've mentioned here, other than, serious life-threatening injuries, can generally be evaluated by a primary care physician in a clinic setting. And there are many clinics that have extended hours where they're available, in the nighttime and on the weekend as well. So I just really encourage people, if they can, get established with a primary care physician or with a system which has those capabilities to meet their medical care without them having to go to an emergency room.
Sarah Birmingham for Ozarks at Large. We'll be right back.
It is Sunday, June 29th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I love Zach Stoltz.
Yeah.
What a great actor. And he had me when I first met him at Arts Live Theater when he said, oh, I read the newspaper every day. God love you, kid. What a great guy. He's around for the summer, as is Haley Zaga and some of their other friends, and they have decided to start a theater company to keep them busy.
With a very unique name.
Crude Mechanicals. Mm-hmm. And the first show they're doing is Romeo and Juliet. They've squished it a little, because nobody wants to sit out at Gully Park for 3 hours. But they promise that it's true to Shakespeare. Okay, well, maybe you do. Kyle's going, why not? Why would you not want to do that?
Let's say not everybody wants to sit in Gully Park.
Well, I said that.
Okay.
But they're doing this at Gully Park through July 9th. First show is tonight, and it will be way fun. They say that the fun element is key to the story.
Okay.
This is not something I've thought about with Romeo and Juliet, but
no,
if you think about it.
Murder and mayhem.
But there's a lot of fun, too.
Okay.
You know, the nurse is a fun character.
True.
In some ways, Tybalt is even kind of a fun character. Mercutio is certainly a fun character. And, of course, there's plenty of tragedy. So it will be Romeo and Juliet.
I have a question. I'll digress here.
Imagine him digressing. Can you imagine that, Christina?
No.
Okay.
Never happens. Do you think anybody will see these performances and be surprised by the ending? I've often wondered that. Does anybody ever see Romeo and Juliet anymore?
Surely.
You think?
I mean, I think so.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
Particularly if they draw in young people
sure.
their age.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Sure, it's possible
okay.
that they don't know the story.
Okay.
I remember thinking, oh, the most romantic thing in the world would be to die in my lover's arms. And then I grew up. But they're still young enough,
right.
They might believe that.
Okay,
7 o'clock tonight at Gully Park Gazebo in Fayetteville. Again, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and July 8th and 9th. It's all free, and you can find them on Facebook at The Crude Mechanicals. Also this afternoon, the Mountain Street stage at the Fayetteville Public Library.
One of your favorite things.
One of my favorite things was Snake Eyes and the Bug Band.
They were in the Furman Garner a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Performance review here at KUAF. A lot of fun.
If you have not been to this.
And we're going to hear more from that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you have not been to this at the library, why? That's all I have. Sidewalk Sunday at the Walmart Museum in Bentonville from 2 to 5. Today they're doing science experiments, mazes, and adventures. There is, of course, opera in the Ozarks at 4 o'clock today at Aerod Arts Center in Bentonville.
You're going Monday, right?
I'm going, tomorrow to see Into the Woods.
Oh, I love that show.
I used to go as a child.
Uh-huh.
My father used to take me to opera, and then up until, I hadn't been in probably 15 years until a couple of years ago.
Oh, absolutely
and
love
I've
Into
been
the
going,
Woods. Do you know that show, Will?
No.
Oh, you'll love it. It has a cow.
I like cows.
Yeah, it's
They're
good.
They're cute.
Today is Puccini, by the way. And today is also Film Sunday at Crystal Bridges Museum in Bentonville. Gertrude Stein, When This You See, Remember Me. That's at 6:30, and it is free with online registration at crystalbridges.org. And again, if you're looking for fireworks, check Friday's What's Up. We had a whole list.
Just about everything you mentioned today, with the exception of Opera in the Ozarks, absolutely free, right?
And it's only $20.
Yeah, all right.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Pendresky focused on the credo from a mass rather than composing an entire mass. Hi, I'm Katie Hendrickson, host of the KUAF Sunday Symphony, Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. on KUAF, as well as 1 p.m. on KUAF2. Join me for the world premiere recording of Pendresky's credo on this Sunday's program.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. This afternoon at 2, Snake Eyes and the Bug Band will perform a free concert at the Fayetteville Public Library as part of the Mountain Street Stage Summer Music Series. Earlier this month, the band stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. During the conversation, the band members discussed how local musicians play traditional Cajun music every other Tuesday evening at Bear's Place, a bar in South Fayetteville.
Bear's Place is like a roadhouse out of the 50s. I mean, it's kind of a throwback of a place, a great place. Barry Bramlett and his family have done a great job there. He retired from, I believe it was Southwestern Bell or AT&T.
AT&T.
One of them telephone pole climbing jobs.
Madre
and
place.
he had a friend of his, bought Ma Drake's old building, was Pop's Barbecue, and had a friend of his, a sound engineer, come in and build some speakers just for the room. He's built a deck out back. He's made a little stage. And we started playing there. It's just been snowballing. Now we can't hardly hold all the people that come.
No, it's bad.
And we move all the tables and chairs. We scoot them out of the way. We make a dance floor. And it's full. I mean, and we teach people how to dance, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you ain't going to be able to get out of this interview without learning how to dance.
I'm okay with that. I'm all right with that.
All right.
So you're part dance teacher. And before we started recording, you're part jumpsuit model. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, sure. I'm glad you asked. Well, let's take the dancing first. Yes. It's dance music, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I love to dance, but I love to couple dance. I don't want to get out there and do what my grandpa called that wiggle worm dancing. I mean, I like that well enough, but it's so much more fun to couple dance. And couple dancing is an activity that's kind of been lost through the years. You know, our grandpas and grandmas knew how to do it, and maybe our moms and dads, if you're as old as I am. But beyond that, kids today, they're really missing out on such a good experience. I mean, if sex, the intimacy of sex is a 10, then dancing is like a 7.5 and G-rated and so much fun. So, yeah, I figure the more people I can teach to dance, more people, more dancers we're going to have, the more people for us to dance with. And oftentimes, in fact, it bears almost every song since we have so many musicians. I'll take a ride on the accordion, I'll sing, then I'll put my accordion down and go dance while Mike plays, then Ray or whoever's playing fiddle plays. Maybe we'll have a steel guitar. Maybe we'll have a mandolin. Maybe we'll have a banjo. I get to get some pretty good dancing in. And then I'll get up just when it's my time to play the accordion. Then I'll set it down, go back and dance again. And we just have a ball with that. So that's the dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And we teach people to dance. Chuck Bluen, a friend of mine from New Orleans, he teaches people to dance. And that's the dance thing. So on the jumpsuits, that's a whole nother story, but really, every man ought to be wearing a jumpsuit. I've got one on right now.
You do,
of course,
a lovely maroon one.
There's a company down in Dallas that's the last company on earth that makes the leisure jumpsuit like our grandpas wore, the short sleeves, the cool little belt, the maybe a faux heraldic symbol on the pocket, I was so into it when I talked to the owners that they made me their company spokesman. So I've been handing out catalogs. Let's see, Bears bought, the guy that owns Bears Place bought one. Kerry Arcega that runs Arcega's coffee shops around here, he just bought one. I'm telling you, you got to catch the wave, man. It's happening. The jumpsuit is coming.
and finally, you also mentioned something about DJing at KUAF a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I can tell you some part. Well, I guess statute of limitations has run out on most everything.
I think so.
KUAF used to be more like what the college radio station is now.
Before it was an NPR station.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, it was kind of both, I think. I mean, they played classical music.
What year?
This would be late 70s, maybe 78, 79. So, yeah, I used to come up and do, on Saturday mornings, I would do the No Request Show, the songs I like to hear. And it was just a real eclectic mix of country, Cajun, blues, weirdo stuff that I liked. And we played weirdo music and indulged in the weirdo stuff that we indulged in the 70s, which were really the very best decade. And I'm so sorry, Antoinette, that you didn't get to experience that.
That's okay.
But all the listeners out there that were in the 70s, they know what I'm talking about.
Well, happy to have you back in the studio after all those years.
Yeah, it's fun. And boy, y'all got some nice digs now, too.
We like it.
Looks all professional and stuff.
It does look all professional.
It used to be
stuff.
An old house.
It was an old house.
Funky old house at that.
It was at that, for sure. Okay, so if people want to see you, they can see you every other Tuesday at Bears.
That's right, every other Tuesday at Bears. And then other than that, we play a lot of private parties, festivals, things like that. We don't do the bar scene very much.
Sure.
We don't play on Dixon Street very much. We're older.
Mm-hmm.
Half of us are married. Our wives don't like us staying out that late.
Sure. Okay. And then you'll be at the Mountain Street Stage Summer Music Series at 2 on Sunday the 29th.
So they tell me.
That's what they tell me. And they tell me, too. If people want
looking forward to it.
If people want more information, what's your website?
We are snakeeyesandthebugband.com. So snake eyes is plural. And or they can get a hold of Jamie Hall on Facebook, J-A-M-E-Y. Or just ask anybody for Jumpsuit Jamie.
Jumpsuit Jamie.
They'll know. Okay. Throughout the South. That's,
that throughout the South.
Recognized. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, Jumpsuit Jamie and your cohorts, would you guys like to play some music for us?
Why, show none.
Certainly. You bet.
Yeah, the name of this song is So What You Reap. And there's a message in this song. But it's down below. You have to really listen to it. Tell me what you think it's about when the song's over.
You got so what you read, then you can read this what you sow. You be a mess less, you can see the lesson that it won't need to know. You play up above if you play it down below. And you better be believing you're about to be receiving better loving than you could know. I used to think it was all about me, then I changed my point of view. Approached from the bottom and now I should have got it to feel how my love was true. Now God's me a happy life and a very satisfying wife. So brothers, pay attention, cause I'm about to mention the way I love my right. You'll be a boy. amazing lesson. You received a lesson that every boy should know. You can play up above if you play down below. Then you better be believing you might to be seen better than you could know.
That was Snake Eyes and the Bug Band performing Sow What You Reap inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. The band will perform a free concert this afternoon at 2 at the Fayetteville Public Library. Visit faylib.org for more information.
Scientists pinpoint a major risk for pregnant women and their babies.
Women who lived, you know, two-thirds to a mile away from where agricultural pesticides were being applied had about a 60% higher risk of their child developing an autism spectrum disorder.
I'm Steve Kerwood, the link between autism and pesticides, next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
That's Sunday at 5 p.m. on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Earlier this morning, we heard my story about Polo. Northwest Arkansas Polo Club has started their 2014 season.
That's right.
On a field that's on Price Coffee Road, which is about 3 miles from downtown Bentonville. Basically, to get there, if you're coming from the south, you take exit 88 like you go to Crystal Bridges.
Okay.
But instead of going left toward Crystal Bridges, you go right toward Pea Ridge.
Okay.
Drive a little ways. You'll see Price Coffee on the left. Keep going, keep going, keep going, and then you'll see the field.
All right.
So that inspired our montage.
That's right. I mean, because polo is played on horses.
Right.
You can't play a game without a horse, right? I mean,
not really.
Yeah.
Then no. It's croquet.
Right. Yeah. Croquet's fun, but.
Right. Yeah. So here is our montage inspired by horses.
Slide through my hay.
Too young to understand some things. Have you ever really felt keen about anything? Oh, yes, horses.
Morning, buddy boy, buddy.
What are you feeling so chipper about today?
I always feel chipper this day of the year.
Well, what's special about today?
Well, I'll give you a hint. It's the 28th.
Oh, no, not for me. Three men and a horse.
Oh, what is the meaning of this? Oh, why, you little pest.
Say, what's the matter with you mugs? Have you got any gallantry at all?
She's in with Whitmore. She's trying to frame you.
I wouldn't mind framing her. A prettier picture I've never seen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Doc. Doc, I'm telling you in secret. She's out to get you.
Why, I've never been so insulted in my life.
Well, it's early yet.
If I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean and set me up on my pony, on my boat.
A fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty Ohio silver.
I'm Maddie Ross. Daughter of Frank Ross.
Oh. Tragic, eh? May I say, your father impressed me with his manly qualities. He was a close trader, but he acted the gentleman.
Well, I propose to sell those ponies back to you that my father bought.
Oh, that I fear is out of the question. I will see that they're shipped to you at my earliest convenience.
Well, we don't want the ponies now. We don't need them.
Well, that hardly concerns me. Your father bought the ponies and paid for them, and there's an end of it. I have the bill of sale.
And I want $300 for Papa's saddle horse that was stolen from your stable.
Back about 18 and 25, I left Tennessee very much alive.
I never would have made it through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been riding on a Tennessee stud. Had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw. One of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I wrote a letter to my Uncle Fudd, and I rode away on a Tennessee stud.
To see how you did in our Sunday morning montage about the horse, go to our website, OzarksAtLarge.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Horseshoe Mountain.
Horseshoe Mountain.
I'm cheating a little bit. It's not quite in our listening area, but...
I thought maybe, like, isn't there a Gallup, Texas?
Sure, but that's further away than
right?
Horseshoe Mountain.
Okay.
Yeah. To get to Horseshoe Mountain, go to the house where I grew up, then get on Highway 178 to Midway, then... turn left and go north on Highway 5 to Arkawana and keep going to Three Brothers. And then you're going to take a left on this country road, and that'll take you to Horseshoe Mountain.
Have you ever been to Horseshoe Mountain?
I think so.
Like when you were growing up?
Oh, I'm sure I was. Right. I'm sure I did. Okay. You know, because let's face it, if you're going to Arkawana, you were going to go on to Three Brothers. No one just stopped at Arkawana.
I mean, why would you?
I don't know. But then I think, I was going to say someone might correct me, but probably not. I think if you turned left and went to where Junior Cobb lived, I think he lived on Horseshoe Mountain.
Trying to follow you. We'll have to take a road trip someday.
Yes. All right.
Well, Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Karnas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. You will not have me tomorrow. I think
no.
After my description of Horseshoe
right.
Mountain, you've decided solo tomorrow.
I know. That's, yes. It's just going to be me tomorrow. And let's see. You talked to somebody, a couple of guys that... did a PBS documentary.
Yes, which will
not
be
shown
several. On PBS and AETN Tuesday night. There's also a screening here. The cast folks from the University of Arkansas were asked by basically National Geographic to do some laser targeting, high-tech surveys of places like the Great Pyramids. And it's part of this series. It'll be on PBS premiering Tuesday. That conversation on your show Monday.
That's right. That's right. Well, we'll end today's show with a little bit of music. A band that I listened to when I was, you know, in high school or so, kind of reminds me of summertime, and that's 311. It's kind of reggae rock.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be at Kane's Ballroom on Tuesday evening. In downtown Tulsa. Yeah, Tuesday evening. The doors open at 7:30. But rather than play a song from 311, I thought I'd play a song from the band that is accompanying them, and that is Ear Funk.
Okay.
And they kind of have that reggae groove too, but yeah. Here's their song, The Get Down.